now, welcome to Oasis Forum, where we explore issues that can help us positively evolve our lives, our society, and our planet. Oasis Forum features authors, activists, artists, and healers working to increase our appreciation of the interconnectedness of life on Earth. Each week, we explore a new topic that impacts our health, our families, our communities, our work, and our environment. Our goal is not just to discuss present challenges, but to develop an awareness of root causes and, importantly, to explore potential solutions. At Oasis Forum, our aim is to inspire hope and share practical ideas for creating a world that works for all. All right, and welcome to Oasis Forum. This is John Michael, your host for this beautiful April evening here in Keene, New Hampshire. And we are happy to have with us a couple of folks from the Monadnock Men's Resource Center. We have Damian Licata and four Seymour co-directors of the Monadnock Men's Resource Center, or MMRC, which I may say from now on because it's simply easier to say. Damian is a caseworker at Monadnock Family Services, and Forrest is a counselor at Franklin Pierce College. Thank you. My memory hasn't totally gone. And they are going to be here today talking to us about the history and the purpose and the future of the Monadnock Men's Resource Center. So we appreciate you coming on with us. Welcome to Oasis Forum.
Well, thanks for having us. Yeah, we're delighted to be here, Robert.
Thanks, Michael.
All righty. And we got a good signal here through the board, so I am happy as a clam after last week's technical issues. And so what I'd like to ask each one of you is just to give a little bit of background of yourself, a little bit of how you got into men's work. And anyone can start. And
This is Damian. I guess I'll start off.
That'd be great. Thank you.
I guess I got involved with thinking about the whole issue of gender and how it affects how we relate to the world. Started thinking about it seriously right here on this campus. I was a student here taking a psychology of gender class, which was dealing primarily with actually it was a psychology of women class, dealing primarily with women's gender socialization. And it was natural for me, in my experience, of course, to think about it in terms of how gender socialization affects men and affected me in my life. I subsequently got involved with the MRC, which is the Men's Resource Center of Western Massachusetts. They're located in Amherst, and began co-facilitating a men's support group down there. The longer I was involved with that group, the more I felt like I would really like to see something like this happening right here in this community. And as fortune would have it, good fortune would have it, I got connected through a mutual friend with my now co-director, Forrest Seymour, and we began a series of long conversations that ultimately resulted in the MMRC.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and for me, although I am also an alum of Keene State College, I can't say that it was really after I was finished here and became a father that I began to really see, because my first child was a daughter, and I began to really see how differently she was treated because she was a girl, even as an infant. And also as a parent, my wife and I shared, we co-parented fairly equally time-wise, and so I spent a lot of time with my daughter and a lot of other parents, most of whom, you know, were women who were taking care of their kids during the day. And I became very aware of how I was treated differently as a father than than women were treated. That was what sort of really dramatized for me some of these issues. And then I began to feel like I wanted the world to be a better place for my daughter and eventually my son as well. And so I was aware also of the Men's Resource Center in Amherst, Mass., although I was not involved with it to the extent Damian was. And as Damian said, we were both, I think, had talked to this mutual friend who about our interest in men's work and the Men's Resource Center in Amherst, and she said, you two should talk. And And we did. And what came out of that after we, you know, met and talked about our shared interest in men's work and trying to bring something to Keene that would sort of help men, support men, as well as challenging men's violence, which is sort of the dual mission of the organization. We started holding a bunch of open forums around, mostly at the public library in Keene, but around Keene. We were doing a lot of men came and talked about a lot of different issues. It was a fascinating process, and this was all, boy, about 4 years ago, three, it was about 4 years ago.
4 years ago when we started talking.
Yeah. And then we had those community forums. And eventually we formed a steering committee and launched our first support group, which we have been doing now for almost 3 years here in Keene every Sunday night at 7, and all men are welcome. It's at Sunday nights at 7 at 43 Central Square in Keene, which is the Life Art Center, it says out front. And that's a two-hour group. It's a great experience, which I hope we have time to talk some more about later.
Oh, we will.
Yeah. So it's been a great experience. I have found that I have been, it's been a challenging experience. Even in the half hour before we came into the studio today, Damien and I are talking about some things. It's like, oh, you know, I'm having to sort of stretch myself. You know, it's continuing to be a challenging experience to deal with these issues, because I think gender is at the base of so much of our perspective on life. We're virtually all of us are raised as a particular gender, and to get out of that box and be able to think in a wider frame is a struggle, mm-hmm. And exciting, and it's fun to be challenged that way.
I really identify what you said when you talked about when you first started raising your daughter, you noticed that you were starting to perhaps impose or see a certain kind of gender expectation. I know I had a son first, then I had a daughter, so I had a really good opportunity to see the differentiation that I was imposing. As conscious as I thought I was, still I think I treated them differently. And it's not that I didn't want my son to play with dolls or my daughter to play with trucks, but perhaps some more subtle things.
Yes.
Around you know, what it means to be a little boy and maybe be a little tough guy or whatever it was, and it just. Just a difference in how I treated them, and in a sense, it sort of continues to this day.
The research I've seen indicates that even as newborns, within hours, there's consistently different behaviors that the adults in a room are having towards an infant based on their gender. You know, even right out of the womb. You know, so that's from day one that we're getting those signals. You know.
So what did you notice? You know, when you were starting to raise your daughter. Around the kinds of expectations or behaviors that you had, what made you take notice that wow, I'm coming from a particular set here?
Well, I think that when my daughter was young, I didn't have as much insight into my own processes as I could see in the other people around me who would just talk about how isn't she cute and give her pink things and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't until my son was born that I really personally began to have to see or accept the own sexism that I had, the sort of subtle ways that I was sort of having expectations for him to be good at sports or to be rough and tumble in ways that I had not expected my daughter to be. I think once I had that comparison to make is when I began to see, oh, there's a lot of this inside myself that I didn't know was there. You know, as you implied, John Michael, you know, it's like I thought I was pretty enlightened and, alert to what was going on. And
I think it's interesting. I had as far as we've come in recent years, I mean, I think that we still have a ways to go. I had an interesting conversation just this morning, in fact, with a friend of mine's son who plays lacrosse in a local kids lacrosse league. And he was talking about how the equipment is different for the boys' lacrosse than it is for the girls' lacrosse. The protective gear is different. The boys wear helmets and goggles. The girls simply wear the goggles. The main difference being that the boys have a much it's much more of a contact, much more of a rough game than it is for the girls.
Right.
But then he mentioned, he said, but, you know, a lot of girls do play in the boys' lacrosse league. And he said, but, you know, no boys play in the girls' league.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's an interesting point because and you can imagine why that would be and how difficult it would be for a boy who might not particularly like the contact, the rough aspect of the game.
Right.
He doesn't have that freedom to be able to opt for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very telling of the messages that we that boys still get today. And the girls as well,
mm-hmm.
Are getting that same message about what is okay for boys and what is not.
In some ways, I think that the messages are ramped up in the last decade or two. There is some interesting work done by a lot of people, but where I've seen it articulated is in some videos made by Jackson Katz, who does a lot of work around men's violence, and he and others talk about hypermasculinity, which has been portrayed in our media more and more. He does this interesting analysis of the G.I. Joe doll, with mm-hmm. which we all are familiar to some extent. If you look at the G.I. Joe dolls from when, like, I was a kid, they are relatively anatomically realistic, you know, muscular, but you could see somebody who looks like that. But you can just track it from decade to decade. These dolls get more and more beefed up until in the 90s they are beyond humanly possible for someone mm-hmm. to have a physique like that. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger in his heyday didn't look like that.
Right, right.
And yet that is the model that is being literally handed to boys and girls, for that matter. I mean, taking this in as in some sort of ideal of masculinity,
mm-hmm.
And so there. I mean, that is just one example, but the way he explains this, Jackson Katz, is that during the 60s and 70s, there were several ways in which the traditional patriarchy of our culture was challenged by the feminist movement, by the anti-war movement, by the gay liberation movement, and that there has been a backlash, and that, you know, politically that was maybe started with the Reagan era, but you that's why you see in our day we have both of these tracks going on. You have a lot of openness for and encouragement for boys and girls, men and women, to think outside that gender box.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have, like, professional wrestling. Look at the images on professional wrestling or on football these days. You know, it's beginning to look more like professional wrestling. And just in the media, we are presented with these contradictory images of this hypermasculinity and also this really little girl femininity. And so we have these stereotypes that are so out of sync with a lot of the other messages we get. So it's very confusing. I think people are very confused about mm-hmm. about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman these days.
Mm-hmm. And so as you have, you know, boys growing up into and through adolescence, they're doing a lot of experimentation. And how do you see this confusion being played out, you know, collectively in boys' behavior during that time when they really are looking for images and models that are going to work in the adult world? I mean, let's face it, in the adult world that they see, a lot of times brute force is still portrayed as the way to get things done. So
I think that in adolescence, I think taking risks is even harder. There's such a consciousness and awareness of and a need to be accepted, and a need to find that place you're talking about, to be able to find themselves, not just in terms of gender, but in all sorts of ways. And I think that there is the fallback position, I think, very often for adolescents, is to revert to these very clear, black and white, traditional definitions of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. That's the safe ground. That's the place to go.
Right.
And that's why we very often will see in that age group a kind of exaggerated femininity or exaggerated masculinity, because that's the safe place to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to take risks at that age. It's difficult at any age, mm-hmm. but particularly in adolescence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important to be able to provide that age group with some alternative role models, some alternative ways of defining themselves.
So if you were to wave your hand and create the perfect, shall we say, school environment, since kids spend so much time in school, especially when we're talking about the adolescent stage, a lot of their role modeling is from peers, or a lot of peer modeling, peer pressure. What would you do? What would you do differently? What would you like to see established in areas such as schools or other places in the community that can help further and help adolescent males with that transition into adulthood?
I'd say that I'd like to see teachers be paid better, because that means more men will teach. right now, teaching is not a highly paid profession. And so, like, you know, typical of our society, it's women who are placed in those sorts of professions. If you get more, I think one, and this is only one small piece of what my magic wand would create, but I think to have more men in the elementary level doing teaching, more women in the elementary level teaching physical education, you know, mm-hmm. We still have those that gender stratification right off the get-go. I mean, in preschool, you know, how many preschool teachers are men? I was so pleased when one male teacher in a large preschool my son went to, one male teacher would be there out of all the other teachers mm-hmm. in that school, and mm-hmm. he would be mobbed by the boys because mm-hmm. they were hungry for mm-hmm. a male role model mm-hmm. that they could spend some time with, you mm-hmm. know. And I was so pleased because generally these are really great guys, you know, mm-hmm. who were available. And that was here at Keene State College in the CDC, the mm-hmm. Child Development Center, where they are as sensitive to these issues as any preschool is going to be, and they struggle to get any men into those mm-hmm. into those classes. So that's what comes to my mind off the bat, is what we need is to elevate teaching to where it should be, I think, which is as an honorable profession that even men can do at the preschool and elementary level.
Even men. Or is it that they, not only does the money have to be increased, but the perception of its value has to be increased as well, which would probably do something for men. I remember when I graduated from college, it was like, well, I've got to get, you know, money, because that was the way I felt I needed to get along. And I looked for jobs that were better paying and didn't go for jobs that weren't. But I, after hitting my head up against the wall, I finally ended up as a counselor. You know how much counselors made with a BA back? This was back in like 83 or something like that. It wasn't much, but I found that it was certainly a lot more satisfying than, you know, the money sort of became secondary. Not that it ever became unimportant, but, yeah. you know, when you really have an opportunity to express a fuller range of yourself, is really important.
Well, that's, of course, you know, typical. I mean, I don't mean to put you in a box here, you know, but typical for a male to come to really be focused on career issues, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you get together with the guys and, you know, you talk about sports or something, but you also talk about your job, you know, it's like, right. how's things going at work, yeah. you know, that kind of stuff. And,
right.
and like in a drop-in support group, you know, often issues around work are there, but the effort in that setting is to create a safe space where men can get beyond those sort of traditional things that they talk about and mm-hmm. talk about more things from the heart, you know, mm-hmm. what's really on their heart, on their minds.
Mm-hmm. Damien, did you have a complimentary vision for what you'd like to see happen?
I think that there are so many things that activities that kids could be involved in that are gender neutral, that anyone who's raised kids, and I've raised kids as well, knows that that there are, it's very difficult to tease out how much is socialization and how much is simply innate differences, because there are innate differences in gender. And I know many parents who have tried very hard to be gender neutral as possible, and yet their kids still seem to gravitate towards these traditional gender roles. The daughter who wants the frilly pink things mm-hmm. and the son who's just, you know, so much a rough and tumble sort of kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's important to be able to accommodate the innate differences, but I think that it's also very important to be able to, maybe more important, to be able to appreciate that not everything needs to be separate, and that there are, you know, many aspects that are universal, and that those are the things I'd like to see incorporated more in the way children are educated and raised.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, Forrest mentioned one of the things that our support group does is that, you know, the men who come to that group come to it, you know, after a lifetime of a different kind of experience, of the kind of experience that most of us have had,
mm-hmm.
Where it's not safe to be able to express our emotions, particularly with each other. I think that men don't feel safe becoming at all vulnerable with each other. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of conversation around, you know, what do you do, how much do you make, you know, sports kind of sorts of conversations, I think that those kinds of things are where keeping things more or less superficial, mm-hmm. are where men tend to be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't deny the fact that they have a tremendous need to be able to connect on a different level. Mm-hmm. And what our open support group does is it provides that safety. It provides that kind of different experience for men. Very often, for the very first time, they're able to connect with each other in a more meaningful way, mm-hmm. and in a way that's not about status or power. Mm-hmm. There isn't the kind of trying to, you know, with a group of new men getting together, trying to figure out, you know, who is going to be the alpha dog there. Mm-hmm. And it's really all about just trying to find that commonality of experience, mm-hmm. in a way that you can only discover by open communication through the heart, mm-hmm. and in safety, and knowing that you're not going to be either ridiculed or that someone is not going to take advantage of your vulnerability, mm-hmm. or call it weakness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and on that note, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back talking more about the male psyche and patriarchy and men's work and what we can do about it. So thanks for joining us, and stick with us.
If you had to decide who deserves to go to college, who would it be? A single mom coming back to class with dreams of being a nurse? Or a high school grad intent on a biotechnology career? A police officer learning more about Homeland Security? Or an out-of-work technician who needs new skills to get a job? Every American deserves a chance for a better future, and community colleges are that gateway for millions of Americans. Our communities and local businesses depend on the students we educate. Today, enrollment at community colleges is growing dramatically, but funding to serve these students is not keeping pace. We need your support to keep the door of opportunity open for all. Important futures are riding on community colleges, including our nation's. Community colleges, the face of America, the future of America.
Flow easy into Saturday mornings with Planetary Prism at Exonics. New age and world music for body, mind, and soul. 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Saturday on WKNH 91.3 FM.
All right, and you are listening to Oasis Forum, and in our studio we have the co-directors of MMRC, or Monadnock Men's Resource Center, Damien Licata and Forrest Seymour, and we are talking about what makes man a man, and how to understand this transitional period that we're in our culture, and helping men to redefine their roles and their sense of identity in order to have a fuller experience of living, and also to reduce violence against women and others in the family, in the community, and in the world. And gentlemen, we have a kind of a collective, shall we say, drama going on in the world right now with President Bush and the neoconservatives, and a segment of the American people that seems to believe that violence and getting one's way and going it alone and being a cowboy and not listening to your neighbors is the way to get things done. And it seems to be the way to get things done at a certain level, perhaps not to make friends, but it seems to get things done. So what do you see going on collectively in this exploration of the male psyche? What's healthy about that? What's not healthy about that? Where do you see this possibly going? How do you see this transition happening? That's a lot, but just pick anything out of that seems ripe to you.
Well, I think that a big part of the male culture, if such a thing exists, is the idea that the way to get things done, as you say, is through dominance and control. And I think that very often we struggle with that. I mean, I personally struggle with that, and have struggled with it within our own organization, in talking about how to lead and what is appropriate. And I find myself challenged by the fact that very often I myself might feel more comfortable in a sort of dictatorial style. But we are committed within the MMRC of doing things by consensus, mm-hmm. Whenever possible and appropriate, which is most of the time.
And it's been interesting being co-directors, because I think that, you know, there isn't an alpha dog, wolf, whatever, in our organization. I mean, we share this responsibility, and that's been confusing for some people that we've dealt with, you know, as we've been setting up presentations or something that we're doing, because they sort of want to think that there's somebody in charge, you know, and we share that, you know, and that was a conscious choice in a lot of ways to try to undermine kind of traditional patriarchal systems, and certainly, you know, well, the MMRC has spoken out through letters to the editor in regards to our country's foreign policy and how that we think perpetuates traditional and dangerous models of masculinity. I mean, I don't think it's too far. And Damien, you can cut me off here if I'm going too far, but I don't think I'm going too far to say that there's a link between what our this present administration is modeling and domestic violence. You know, that we are seeing, people in our society, most of whom are men, who perpetuate perpetuate dangerous, violent domestic violence, life-threatening domestic violence, that people who are have some potential to do that are going to see what's going on in our foreign policy and going to say, well, if it works for them, it can work for me. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be a conscious process, but I think there's a modeling that happens through our foreign policy and domestic policy, for that matter, that it trickles right on down to what we see happening in the homes of our friends and people we care about.
I think it's very much embedded in our culture, too, in this country, in the United States. I mean, and it's not a new phenomenon. If you look back to the great all-American hero, Superman, it was all about force and violence and as a way of might making right and you know, righting wrongs. And I think that sort of culture, that kind of national psyche is still very much dominant. I mean, if you look in the media, superheroes are, if anything, more violent than they used to be. And I think creates a culture. I think it sets a tone that certainly does. I think you're right, Forrest. I think it certainly does create a climate in which domestic violence is certainly much more likely to occur, and all kinds of violence in our society.
And I think it's important, and this is a part of what the Monadnock Men's Resource Center is about. And I guess I'd like to say as an aside that we are just one of many men's resource centers around the country, none of which are officially connected in any sort of financial way or anything, but we are all members of a loose coalition, and so there's a lot of work in this area going on, and a part of what that work is about, particularly for our organization, is to acknowledge men's roles in this violence. I mean, here I am talking about this administration, you know, using a gender-free term, when in fact this administration is almost completely male. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but there's only one high-profile cabinet member who is female, as far as I can think right at this moment. And so what we're talking about are men who are perpetuating this violence through the foreign policy, through domestic policy, and also, you know, I think that comes right down to our lives. I was in northern Minnesota a few weeks ago when the young man took the guns that he stole into the high school there and killed a bunch of people. And, you know, I think it's important to say that was a young man. You know, the school violence, which, you know, is not a plague, but it crops up, and it's always so disturbing to all of us. Almost all of that is perpetrated by boys, by young men. This is an issue of young men's violence. And if you look at our media doesn't say that. I was again, you know, following the Red Lake incident, I was saddened to see that the media did not identify that this is about men doing violence. Even when you see the articles where they list all these incidents that have happened over the last several years, they have photos and all. It's all men, and they aren't saying this is about our young men, this boys. They don't identify that. So there's a blindness within our society about boys and men's roles in perpetrating violence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you maybe have heard the recent news article about the group at UNH, and there's a group of, a feminist collective of some kind, and they've been getting together and talking about some of the issues facing women, including an ongoing pattern of rapes and sexual violence at universities, which is not new to any university, but it's something that goes on. And even though hasn't been any reports of increases, still it's an issue. If there's one, it's an issue. And there's some of the brouhaha has been around the fact that now some of these women are getting together and wearing scissors around their necks and talking about, shall we say, a more castrating attitude towards men. And there has been
I think it's probably important to say we're talking about towards men who I can't get that word out of my
correct.
Mouth, who perpetrate
right.
violence. You
right.
know, it's not. I would imagine that they are targeting that towards these particular men.
Well, I think that's the case, but it often is difficult to make the distinction because all men sometimes tend to lump together, and they sometimes try to hang out and, you know, bear each other's wounds, if you know what I mean. It's part of sort of the male psyche to do that. And so, you know, where do we draw the line here in terms of feminist activism and even men standing up for women's rights without bashing all of men? You know, which and all of the male psyche. How do we begin to do that education without creating more of the division between the sexes, which there seems to be already quite a bit of?
One of the things that we've encountered in these kinds of conversations is that very often when we talk about things like men's responsibility for violence, we're not talking about the fact that all men perpetrate violence. That's not what we're saying when we say that. Very often there is a sort of knee-jerk defensiveness that comes out of this when we talk about men's responsibility. But we are men, and we're talking to men, and that's our focus. And I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that while all men certainly don't perpetrate violence, I think we all have a responsibility to be better role models, to be leaders in our community, to address these issues. The fact of the matter is that that the overwhelming majority of violence in this society is perpetrated by men. Most victims of violence are also male.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims of male-on-male violence. And I think it's important to be able to acknowledge that, to be able to talk about that without it being divisive. I think that very often there's this notion that feminism is somehow the enemy, that when we start talking about feminist principles, that's somehow anti-male.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we're talking about gender equity, when we're talking about becoming more free from the constraints of the gender roles which we are all socialized into,
mm-hmm.
That has been the work of feminism, and that men have as great a stake in that as women do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to realize that, and it's not always easy to communicate that without it without someone experiencing it as an attack, particularly
mm-hmm.
men.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to understand that and to keep saying that men do have an important responsibility and an important role to play
mm-hmm.
in addressing these issues in our culture.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking about also some of the images of men portrayed, especially on TV and sitcoms and that sort of thing. We were talking about before we started this interview, and sometimes or oftentimes men are portrayed in feminized roles and aren't shown in what could be called a positive light. A lot of times they're ridiculed even in that role. Can you say anything about collectively what's going on in that process, and why is it that it's so difficult to show men in a positive male role that's not a Bruce Willis Die Hard kind of role?
Mm.
You know, what is it that, where is this the space for men to begin inhabiting something that's not just a substitute for the women's role, you know, but that's uniquely a man's role?
I think that very often we see men in those sitcoms being portrayed as inept when they attempt to be nurturing parents, for example. Very often, it's they do become sort of the butt of the joke because, well, guys don't know how to do this, and isn't that funny when they try? And I think that you're right. I think that it's important to be able to show men being in their own way, being able to bring their full human qualities to those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And very often it's an easy joke, and everyone gets it because everybody understands how limited these roles are.
Yeah. I think one piece of what the MMRC has tried to do with some success and some limited success is to build bridges between straight men and gay men. And I think straight men, you know, have a lot to learn from gay men. I think of with some risk of mentioning it. I think of the A Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, mm-hmm. as an example of a TV show where, the tables are turned. Now, it's sort of a fantasy show because, in fact, you know, in most ways, gay men are, you know, oppressed or in danger when they are as out of the closet as the men in the Queer Eye are. But there for an hour, you have this world which is sort of turned over where gay men have the power and the authority and the straight men are are toeing the line and want to learn from these men who have stepped out of that traditional gender mm-hmm. role.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I think that a part of – I mean, I'm not quite sure a feminized man looks like exactly – but I would say that if we can create an environment in our entertainment where men stepping out of a traditional role of the Bruce Willis tough guy stuff is the one who gets the girl in the end or gets the guy in the end or whatever, I think that. There are some examples of that in the media these days. And the ones that come to my mind, I think of Six Feet Under, shows again that have gay characters where I think that when you bring in, themes of gay themes that you by force are having to sort of question traditional masculine roles, mm-hmm. and I find that fascinating and mm-hmm. a fascinating trend in our society that mm-hmm. that you see more and more of this on TV.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly opens up new possibilities for behavior that are becoming more accepted. I know how much my kids love that show. It's like, well, let's just see something different.
And
the fresh air of something different and, you know, the ability to not be hemmed in by those role definitions, I think, is really potent. Mm-hmm. We're here in our studio on Oasis Forum speaking with Forrest Seymour and Damien Licata, the co-directors of Monadnock Men's Resource Center. And we want to remind our listeners that you can call in and ask our guests some questions, 358-8863, 358-8863. And I'd like to read a little bit from the book We by Robert Johnston. He wrote a book called He and a book called She and then a book called We. So this is one from We. And this is the first part of a chapter or two called The Child of Sadness. He says, the world of King Mark, King Rivelin, and Duke Morgan is a vivid symbol of our patriarchal mind. None of us is fully aware of how much he or she is dominated by patriarchal prejudices. None of us is fully awake to how much the masculine pursuit of power, production, prestige, and accomplishment impoverishes us and drives the feminine values out of our lives. Like Tristan, we are the children of sadness. Western people are children of inner poverty, though outwardly we have everything. Probably no other people in history have been so lonely, so alienated, so confused over values, so neurotic. We have dominated our environment with sledgehammer force and electronic precision. We amass riches on an unprecedented scale, but few of us, very few indeed, are at peace with ourselves, secure in our relationships, content in our loves, or at home in the world. Most of us are crying out for meaning in life, for values we can live by, for love and relationship. So on that note, I was wondering if you would speak a little bit more to these values and these characteristics that men are beginning to explore that have often been perhaps been seen as the purview of the feminine, but you know, we don't even need to put that in a box. What do you see has been missing from men's lives, and what do you see men capable of becoming when they start to recover what's missing?
I think one of the biggest things that's missing is the ability to connect, the experience of connection, and you know, with other men, with our friends, but even with our own families, with our own children. I think that men are very often cut off emotionally, even physically, very often because of their so much of their lives is outside of the home. And I think that it's very important for men to be able to have the opportunity, and I see this happening more and more, where they are becoming more involved in their family lives, in their children's lives. They have come to appreciate the importance of both parents in the home. And I'm not saying that single parents cannot effectively raise a child, but I think that it's very important that men be appreciated for their roles as in raising children. Mm-hmm. And I think that men are getting are becoming more aware of this. Unfortunately, there are those out there who might want to exploit this need for men that they're discovering, and very often there are a number of fathers' rights organizations out there that can be very sort of retrograde and falling back to what we would call traditional family values that often are simply that old restricted roles. But I think that on the positive side, I think that a balance is being struck in a lot of men's lives and in a lot of families where there's a greater opportunity for men to be able to experience that kind of connection. I think that the kind of work that the MMRC does and organizations like ours is to allow men to try that on, to sort of get an experience of connecting in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so I see that as very encouraging. Mm-hmm. And I think that you know, current political climate aside, mm-hmm. I think that's a trend mm-hmm. that we're moving towards.
Yeah. When I think about patriarchy, I think about overcoming patriarchy, I think of there sort of being dual tracks. I think that there's a political track, and that's important. I mean, I think it's important to acknowledge how subversive the notion of getting beyond patriarchy is, and that, I mean, it's a piece of why I do this work, is because I think it is pretty subversive. I think we're really talking about changing the way that we see the world, you know, without getting too esoteric here. I think that we often see the world in a binary form, good, bad, black, white. And I think that we are taught that from the earliest ages because of the sort of bottom line duality that we are presented with of gender, male, female, as if there is male and female and that's it. You get one or the other. Mm-hmm. When in fact, there is a huge variety of gender that people people who consider themselves men are all over the place in terms of their gender. People who consider themselves women are all over the place with mm-hmm. their gender. I mean, I am heartened working with college students because I find that the generation of college students, the millennials, I guess they would be called, mm-hmm. are overall, I think, more open to a variety of gender constructions than my generation was. And I find that to be, you know, reassuring. I think the other side of it is, you know, is the external sort of political side. The other side is the internal, you know, dealing with our own identity, and trying to sort of understand the patriarchy that's sort of embedded inside of all of us. I recently went to a workshop with Tom Balestrieri, who's done a lot of work with Native cultures around the world, and he talked about a native assumption that we are all male and female, mm-hmm. and that initiation rituals are often about women becoming comfortable with those two pieces of themselves and men becoming comfortable with those two pieces of themselves, mm-hmm. so that a well-rounded, initiated, grounded adult male will be comfortable with both being, you know, what we might call masculine and what we might call feminine, that mm-hmm. in fact that's all within their purview, you know. And mm-hmm. and that's, you know, again, waving my magic wand, I think that one of the things that's missing in our culture is healthy initiation for boys, mm-hmm. also for girls, mm-hmm. often. But for boys, they're pretty much left up to their own devices, you right. know, and it usually has to do with alcohol and driving fast and right. that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, actually, I took part in what was then called the New Warriors Movement, which is now called the Mankind Project, which is a, you know, an intensive men's workshop, which I'm sure you know about. And even though I was no stranger to process work and inner work that they were proposing, what was really unique to me and the value that I got out of the experience was being with a group of men who were supporting each other. I mean, that really just blew my mind. And I remember at one point during the weekend, I had this really big uprush of competitiveness that, you know, it was kind of like the head of the monster in a way. It's like where I saw everyone as kind of my enemy in a way. It was like, you know, they were all out for the same whatever. It wasn't even a conscious thought. It was more like a feeling of really being alienated and isolated. And it really kind of freaked me out. It was kind of like, this is the male psyche in, you know, writ large. This is what we're all dealing with. If we could be aware of how alienated we are, I think we would all take pause and go, wait a minute, this isn't quite what it is, but we do sort of have a culture, a warrior culture still, especially nowadays, and it's difficult, I think, sometimes to really understand how separated we are and how competitive we are. But, of course, that's inculcated every step along the way. School is largely competitive, and going back to what we're talking about, school, not cooperative. And cooperative is more of a, you know, I think a life-centric value, or not necessarily a feminine value, but more of a life value. We exist much more through cooperation than we do through competition, even though competition has been sort of raised to the status of this cultural icon. But I think we've seen what can't work out of that. So how do you see us transforming this warrior culture? What do you see as the next step, and maybe some of this, you know, the next phase of our development, maybe some of the ways that we can collectively move towards that, given especially the gridlock in our national political dialogue? Where do you think the fulcrum point is here for change?
Well, what do you think, Damien?
That's a big question. we tend to work locally here.
Yes.
I mean, very locally. And I think that we can talk about vast cultural influences and the sort of geopolitics, but I think that you know, for us, we're working on our little corner of the world here, mm-hmm. and I think that it's very telling and very sad that it would be a surprise to find oneself in a place where a group of men were all there supporting each other, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what we're trying to change in our little way, is to get a group of men together in a room and have it be about just that, be about supporting each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where the change is going to come about. Mm-hmm. I'm a strong believer in the ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe, and in fact, I've seen it, that men will come out of an experience like that, and they will be transformed and in a way in which they can pass along, and in little ways, the people around them are also transformed. And I think that it's while it would be nice to think of our national leaders being able to change, turn things around, be able to change the sort of tone that is set, but that's not going to happen from the top down. It has to happen from the bottom up, and that's where that's the level that we're working at.
Mm-hmm. Yes, somebody, a young woman, actually quoted to me something Gandhi said the other day. It reminded me of something Gandhi said about be the change you want to see. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a piece of what we're about here. And, you know, when we're talking about this drop-in support group, this place to start, like Damien was just talking about, you know, we're not talking about We're not talking about a weekend men's retreat. We're not talking about sweat lodges. We're not talking about initiation rituals. We're not talking about a big leap here. We're talking about a very simple experience of sitting in a circle, not even a circle, just sitting in a square on, you know, chairs and couches. There's no hand-holding. There's no, you know, it's very user-friendly, and it's designed to be that way. It's a starter place for men, often these men who are in crisis, you know, a divorce or something's gone on. Something has told them that things are out of balance in their life, and somehow they've heard about this group. Often it'll be a woman who's suggested it to them, not always. And, you know, they'll show up, and there's no expectation to talk or participate. It's very simple. We try to make it as easy as possible. I think, you know, in my mind, it functions on three levels in terms of social change. There's the men who come in the door and sit down and often walk away or say to me or one of us who's facilitating, they'll say, I've never had an experience like this before in my life, that this will be a brand new thing to sit safely and share with other men. And then also there is our on an organizational level that we're, you know, we do presentations in schools. We join with other organizations in the community to sponsor anti-violence programs. We do whatever we can, you know, to sort of move things along. But there's a third level of involvement or sort of an intermediate level that I wanted to talk up a little bit right now, make a little advertisement if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Is that we are recruiting volunteers for our drop-in support group. This would be men, of course. Each Sunday night we have two trained facilitators who facilitate the support group, and those are the volunteers that we're looking to recruit a few more for. We also have been in discussion with the local county corrections folks about doing a group at the House of Corrections here in Cheshire County. So we're looking for men who would be interested in making a commitment to spend some time in the local jail to work with the men there. I'll let Damien give you the phone number. We have a new phone number, so I was a little confused about what number we have. If anyone's interested, they can call our new 800 number, which is 866-969-6672, and maybe I'll repeat that again in a few minutes.
And I want to just mention, too, that you had said that these are trained facilitators, and this is training that we provide.
Right.
We don't expect you to come, you know, already trained and know how to do this, but it is a very simple format, although, you know, it has a very clear sort of philosophical basis, but we do provide the training to anyone who's interested in doing that.
Right. I noticed it said on your materials that it's not about getting or giving advice. You want to say something about that?
And it's not a therapy group. We're not there to fix each other. It's really about support.
Your website? You'd like to give that to
your listeners? www.mmrconline.org is our website. Our calendar there isn't as up to date as we'd like it to be, but some of the basic information is clear. And again, our new phone number, which isn't on the website yet, is new just in the last couple of days. The 800 number we now have is 866-969-6672, and that has details in the message there about the Sunday night drop-in group that you can. The location and all of that.
And do you have any other upcoming events that you'd like to tell the listeners about?
Well, our energy at this point is going into the facilitator training, starting the group at the House of Corrections, and also Damien, more than I, has been working on a father's group. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all.
Well, we're in the preliminary stages of putting together a father's both support and education group, we've been speaking with various people in the community, trying to get a sense of what that group should look like in order to best serve the needs of fathers in this area. But that's targeted as something we'd like to have up and running within the year.
We are an all volunteer organization, so you know, nobody's getting paid, but any donations are always a big help as well.
So in our last few minutes, I'd like to, if you could, hear a couple of stories, of course, without names, a couple of stories of changes that you've noticed in some of the men that may have come in starting, you know, when you started or more recently. Mm. What kinds of shifts have you seen in people? What are they, how are they learning through this? What kinds of behavioral changes are they making just out of coming together with other men and talking?
Well, there's a lot of stories. I one thing that comes to my mind is, you know, it is a confidential group, so I'm not going to be able to give a whole lot of details about individuals. But one part of the model of this group is that the men who come to the group will eventually get trained to facilitate it, or some of them will. And it's been gratifying that that has worked. So we have men who are now our facilitators who 2 years ago maybe started coming to this group in just huge crisis, mm-hmm. You know, really lives completely falling apart, not, you know, it's huge change in their lives. And through the support of this group, they have come to a place where they're able now to give back, and that they're able to be reliably there on a Sunday night to provide support and help create this space for the next crew of men who are in need. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that is, and kind of getting back to what I said before, I think that's a great service. It's a big piece of what we want to do, is provide a men a way to give back. I mean, this is what men want. They want to help make the world a better place, and here's a small way that men can. So it's been moving for me to see men go through that transition over a period of a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to...
Well, one of the things that I've observed on a couple of occasions is that where men will relate in the group how they have been able to incorporate even the group's simple ground rules outside of the group, and in our ground rules, aside from the obvious confidentiality, are have to do with things like you know, inclusiveness and non-judgmentalism and non-violence, and men have talked about how they've been able to take that outside of the group and be able to incorporate that into how they relate to others in their lives. Mm-hmm. The group, I mentioned inclusiveness is one of them, and there really is a cross section of men that come into there across all you know, sex, socioeconomic and education and so forth.
Sexual orientation
as well. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that men have come to appreciate their commonality and have talked about that as well, mm-hmm. Much more than their differences, mm-hmm. in that setting. Mm-hmm. And I've seen men who have come in there extremely defended and extremely cautious and very much entrenched in the traditional gender role, mm-hmm. Over time allow themselves to become much more vulnerable and sharing and to appreciate that experience and be appreciated as well.
Well, that's really wonderful to hear, and really appreciate the resource that you both are offering, not only in terms of time, but also your open hearts and helping men to come to terms with who they are and transition into a more mature and holistic view of what we can be together, men and women, in creating a new planet. So we want to just thank you for being here. We've been speaking with Forrest Seymour and Damian Licata, the co-directors of Monadnock Men's Resource Center. Thank you, men.
Thank you. Thanks for creating this on-air space for this conversation.
Appreciate the opportunity.
And we look forward to hearing more about your work with fathers and also your work in the prison. So at some later time, hopefully you can come back and tell us about that.
Love to.
All right. Thanks for joining us. You are listening to WKNH 91.3 Keene.